It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Lee Quarles of Monsanto Public Affairs. Thank you, Mr. Quarles. We may now begin.
Thank you, Shay, and good afternoon to everyone on the line. Thanks for joining us for this update call related to ongoing developments in the USDA's reported detection of the original Roundup Ready weed event. I'm joined today by Rob Fraley, our Chief Technology Officer. In addition, Phil Miller, the lead of our Global Regulatory Affairs function, and Claire Kajacob, the senior lead of our wheat technology platform, will be joining us for the Q&A portion of today's call. This call is being recorded, and we will post a copy of the recording and the supporting slides on our website at www.monsanto.com/GM Wheat. The slides can also be accessed directly through the link included on the invitation to this briefing at this time. We've outlined the full agenda for this call on slide 2, and today we'll run through these topics on this call, and then I'll be happy to take your questions. Now, let me turn the call over to Rob.
Thanks, Lee, and good afternoon to everyone on the line. I'd like to use our call to provide a brief report on what we've learned to date and what we've done as a business to support the USDA and the broader wheat industry as we all work collectively to get to the bottom of the reported detection of the event 71800, or what we refer to as the CP4 event in wheat. I'd like to walk you through all the critical data points that we've collected to date. I'll touch on the existing testing methods that have been made available, and also what we're seeing out of foreign markets. And then I'll review the extensive testing that's been done by the USDA, by our business, and by Washington State University, and we'll review all of the information that we have on the very thing that the USDA's investigation now focuses on, that single field on that single farm in Oregon. Let's begin at a high level with slide 3 and a snapshot of what's most important for everyone to understand. First, all of the information to date confirms that this incident relates only to a single field on a single farm in Oregon. Second, the CP4 event in wheat has been recognized as safe by the FDA, and the USDA has repeatedly stated that there's no public health or food safety concern. Importantly, there's no indication that the CP4 event is present in either commercial seed or in grain. All information to date, including the data compiled and reported by the USDA, including on the Oregon farm itself and adjoining fields, as well as an extensive set of materials tested by our business and Washington State University, highlight that there is no presence of the CP4 event in wheat samples collected outside of the single field in Oregon. This is vitally important information for area wheat growers that are now gearing up for harvest in the next couple of weeks. And this data should also provide confidence to grain handlers in the area and foreign market buyers, as well as seed suppliers in the region. Together, the U.S. government, industry, and the university community have done exactly what they should do in our regulatory system: cooperate to evaluate the issue carefully. Our regulatory system is working, and we have worked hard to address the first question of whether the event is in commerce. And the answer is no. The evidence confirms that this is an isolated event on one field. Taking a step back, I think this speaks to the rigor of the regulatory system that we have in place in our country. So the next question is, what facts led to the reported detection on the one isolated field at issue? Let's begin with a quick review of the development of the validated testing methods and international grain markets by turning to slide 4. As we reported earlier this month, we've developed an event-specific validated testing method and provided that to the USDA on May 23rd, as well as to foreign governments at their request. We are pleased to report that, as announced last week, the USDA has now validated our event-specific PCR method for detecting the 71800 event. We understand that the agency's validation was granted by GPSA, our nation's leading authority in grain inspection and testing. This is a very important development. Several foreign governments, including Japan, Korea, and the European Union, are also in the processing of validating the event-specific testing method for use in grain shipments, if they so choose. Importantly, there have been no reports of this specific wheat event in grain anywhere around the world by anybody at this time. And I'd like to recognize the outstanding efforts of the U.S. Wheat Associates, the National Association of Wheat Growers, the National Grain and Feed Association, and the North American Exports Grain Association as they work with the USDA to address this matter in the U.S. as well as in international markets. Now, there's been a tremendous amount of uncertainty and misinformation about what's going on in the wheat marketplace. And while Japan and Korea have temporarily suspended new purchases of soft white wheat, it is important to note that we are not aware of any wheat orders being canceled or any deliveries being rejected. No other countries have announced purchase restrictions. And there's been no adverse effect on wheat prices. So with the international testing and markets data as a backdrop, I'd like to turn to slide 5 and take a closer look at the commercial seed testing that's been conducted by the USDA, by our business, and by Washington State University. This work includes testing results by Monsanto and Washington State University of more than 75 wheat varieties planted in the Pacific Northwest. The varieties tested represent 97% of the Oregon soft white wheat acres for which varieties were reported in 2011. And all of these results highlight that there's been no detection of the CP4 event in these commercial wheat stocks. And this really rules out a breeding program contamination as the source. Let's start by reviewing our company's finding on slide 6, which we have shared on our website. So using our validated testing method, we have now tested approximately 35,000 samples covering 58 wheat varieties. In total, this represents more than 80% of the acres of soft white wheat varieties grown in the bi-state region for 2011. Our results using the precise event-specific method show no detectable presence of the CP4 event in these commercial seed stocks. Washington State University has also completed a comprehensive screening, which is outlined on slide 7. The university reported this month that it has screened public and private varieties representing 90% of Washington's soft white wheat crop and found no evidence of glyphosate-resistant wheat. And they also noted that it had screened nearly 3/4 of the less heavily planted spring wheat varieties with similar results. WSU said the process has involved 60 varieties, 1,900 advanced breeding lines, and more than 20,000 individual plots from the WSU programs to date. And it includes 26 commercially grown varieties from both the university and from Oregon State University, which are pictured on the slide. Finally, now let's focus on the information that we have from the USDA on slide 8. The USDA confirmed in a statement released by its BRS group late last Friday evening that based on their own testing and the information they've gathered, that it could confirm that testing associated with the investigation so far has been negative and that they have no information that the GE wheat is in commerce. And this includes testing of the seed, that is the Rod and Westbred 528 varieties, originally planted on the 123-acre farm, as well as the grain harvested from the farm in 2012. We now understand that USDA investigators are continuing to conduct interviews with approximately 200 area growers, and Secretary Vilsack has commented that numerous tests in adjoining fields suggest that the reported detection has been limited to this particular field. The USDA has confirmed that all of these samples of seed and grain tested negative for the presence of GE material. So the bottom line from all of these test results, from the USDA, from our business, and from Washington State University, continue to reinforce that the commercial seed supply for the bi-state region does not contain the CP4 event. And it further underscores that this situation is extremely isolated, with all of the testing data again concluding that this is isolated to a single field in Oregon. These are really positive results. So now let's turn to slide 9 and focus our attention on all the information that we know about the specific 123-acre field in question. So here's what we know. Our testing program for the original technology in the state concluded 12 years ago. And since that time, we have not seen any other reports of glyphosate-resistant volunteers anywhere. Our program for closing out the Roundup Ready Wheat program was rigorous, documented, and audited. And all of the seed from the cooperative field research programs were destroyed or shipped to Monsanto in St. Louis or to the USDA ARS Colorado facility. And importantly, the USDA has confirmed, and we have documented, that the material that was sent to its Colorado facility has been destroyed. We know that the farmer himself never participated in any of the field testing, and to the grower's knowledge, the field in question was never used in any trials. We know from our own tests on the two varieties planted by the farmer, Rod and WB528, as well as from the USDA's own tests on the same two varieties, that the CP4 event was not present in the seed varieties the grower planted in 2011. Importantly, the USDA has also confirmed that the CP4 event was not present in the grain that was harvested from the farmer's field in the summer of 2012. And so, as you know, last spring, the spring of 2013, after farming the same field for 9 years without encountering any problems with uncontrolled wheat volunteers, the farmer found a smattering of volunteer wheat plants in the field and in only about 1% of that field. So plant samples were collected, sent to the university for analysis, and were reported to contain the CP4 gene. So remember, the CP4 event wasn't in the two seed varieties the farmer used to plant the field or in the grain harvested from it. So from here on, what happened in this field, in our opinion, is suspicious. To start, the USDA reported that glyphosate-resistant CP4 event volunteers were not detected in any of the other fields that were planted by this farmer with the very same seed blend. Now, had the CP4 event been present in the original seed, it would have been expected to be uniformly present in all of his fields. Also, the USDA has reported no detection in samples from the local seed provider or from adjoining fields, meaning it's unlikely that the CP4 event in the volunteer wheat found in that 123-acre field was introduced from a nearby farm or field. we found the observation that a smattering of volunteer wheat plants in the field, and only in about 1% of that field, to be extremely odd. So we reached out to the attorney representing the farmer, and he confirmed the appearance of the CP4 vent containing glyphosate-resistant volunteers appeared in patches or clumps and appeared here or there in the field. Now, for those not familiar with the agronomic practices of a wheat farm, that may not seem like a big deal. But here's why it matters. Wheat planting distributes the seed uniformly throughout a field, as shown on slide 10. Hypothetically, if the CP4 event was present as a contaminant in the two seed varieties planted by the farmer, then it would have been uniformly dispersed across the field. Second, wheat harvesting is shown on slide 11. Combines are designed to uniformly disperse the harvested material throughout the field, including the chaff, the straw, and a small amount of grain. Hypothetically, if the CP4 event was present in the grain, it would have been, again, uniformly dispersed across the field. Finally, following harvest, the remaining wheat seeds left in the field would germinate to become volunteer wheat plants, which again would appear uniformly distributed in a typical fallow field, as shown in slide 12. Importantly, none of these standard farming practices are consistent with or can explain a smattering of volunteer wheat plants in the field and in only about 1% of that field, or as patches or clumps of volunteers. Secretary Vilsack also noted earlier this month at the National Press Club, this particular circumstance is unusual and odd and very rare. Our view is this is the pattern you would expect if someone had dispersed the seed. That is, had entered the field and sown the seed mechanically or by hand at some point during the subsequent fallow cycle when the field was not being farmed. I want to underscore that we continue to believe that this farmer is a victim in this situation, and we have respected his decision to remain anonymous. However, the fact pattern and the agronomic data that we know about planting, harvesting, and volunteer management indicates the strong possibility that someone intentionally introduced wheat seed containing the CP4 event in his field sometime after the farmer initially planted it. On our last call, we were open to many scenarios, including the accidental or purposeful contamination. The evidence now collected, the fact patterns established, and the original Roundup Ready CP4 event appearing suddenly after 12 years, out of nowhere, in a single field in the state of Oregon is highly suspicious. With harvest approaching, our total effort is focused on supporting our farmer customers and sustaining the confidence in our grain harvest and ensuring that international markets remain open. We will continue to cooperate with the USDA with the hope they will close this investigation in a timely fashion. As in our last call, I would encourage anyone who has further information on this investigation to please share it with the authorities. We do have outstanding and ongoing requests for the actual testing methods, results, and plant samples that are subject of the investigation. We continue to believe that such information will be vitally important to allow us to further understand the chain of custody of the plants in question, and more importantly, we believe these samples will allow us to fingerprint the exact wheat variety that is being implicated. This is critical information that can provide further insights as to the source of the CP4 event. For example, if the fingerprint analysis would confirm it to be a hard red spring wheat variety found as a volunteer in a soft white winter wheat field, it would reinforce the likelihood of intentional contamination. So let's conclude by turning to slide 13, and I'd like to make the following key points in summary. First, as reported by the USDA, by Washington State University, and Monsanto, there has been no detection of the CP4 event in commercial seed or grain, period. The USDA has confirmed there's been no detection of GE wheat in commercial grain, and we are not aware of any wheat orders being canceled or any deliveries being rejected at this time. A validated event-specific assay has been provided to the USDA and international governments. All of the data and observations to date continue to highlight this is a very isolated situation, limited to a single field on a single farm in the state of Oregon. The fact patterns surrounding the appearance and detection of CP4 wheat event in this field are suspicious, and they're not easily explained by seed contamination, normal farming practices, nor the patterns of volunteer wheat in this grower in his fields. The unfortunate reality, based on the current facts, is that this extremely rare incident should be investigated, as the CP4 event suddenly appearing out of nowhere after 12 years in a single field in the state of Oregon is very odd. So with that, let me hand it back to Lee, and we'll take some of your questions.
Thank you, Rob. Shay, we'd like to now open the line for questions, and we have about 20 minutes to take questions.
Thank you. We'll now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. So all participants have a chance to ask questions, we ask you to limit your questions to one and then come back into queue for follow-up questions. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from Matt Williams from Illinois Agri-News.
Hi, Rob. Matt Williams. I have a two-part question. The first part, if you had to speculate, who do you think would have the motive for contaminating this field? And the second part would be, who would have the means to obtain this Roundup Ready wheat seed?
Matt, thanks for the question. You know, to begin with, I'd say, you know, the more data that we generate, you know, the more clarity we're getting on this and the more suspicious it looks. But also, I need to confirm that we don't know the grower or the site or the location. So, you know, our investigation is very, very limited. What I can tell you is that we know we did a very thorough job of shutting down our testing program. And that all of the data I reviewed today is highly suspicious.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andy Pollack from New York Times.
Yes, good morning. I was curious, you mentioned we don't know yet what variety the volunteers were, or even whether they were soft white or hard red or some other kind of wheat. Why don't we know that by now, and who's responsible for finding that out, and when will we know that?
Thanks, Andy. Good to talk to you. So maybe I wasn't clear. We covered this in my first call as well. So far, we we have don't know the grower, we don't know the field, and we haven't been given access to samples that were collected for analysis. Those samples, are subject to the investigation, and we certainly respect the USDA's investigative authority. So we do not have the plant samples that are available. As I said, what we do know from all of our testing to date and from the Washington State University testing is that, you know, we've sampled now over 97% of the commercial seed stock used in this region. It's absolutely clean. There's been grain sampling by USDA and by international governments. The grain is clean. And I think most importantly, what we know from our analysis and from what the USDA reported is that the seed varieties actually used by the farmer were clean, and the grain harvested from his fields were clean, and that leads to the suspicious nature of the fact pattern.
So it's the USDA, though, that's going to have to tell us what the volunteer was, what variety?
Right now, those plant samples are in the possession of the USDA.
Shay, we'll take the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carrie Rabin from CBS News.
Hi. If you don't know who the grower was, how do you know that they weren't a participant, and how do you know that the farm over wasn't? I mean, wouldn't the location of the farmer to some degree dictate how suspicious this is?
We don't know the farmer, and we haven't been to the field. But what's been reported both by the USDA publicly from their investigation and what's been reported in communications by the grower's lawyer is that the grower planted two varieties. He planted a mixture of rod and Westbred 528. And so we've obtained those representative seed stock samples, and the USDA who is aware of the grower and the farm and field location, has actually tested the seed stocks that were planted by the farmer.
And how, just as a follow-up, how long will the additional tests take to figure out what the volunteer's plant is?
I would expect that it's just a matter of days.
Shay, we'll take the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mary Claire Jelinek from Associated Press.
Yeah. Could you all speak generally about what motives could be in a situation like this? And also, how would someone obtain this since your tests were shut down, as you said, effectively 12 years ago?
Well, it's hard for me to speculate. I'm a scientist and I'm fact-driven, and so I've really tried to report here what the facts conclude. And I think, again, the facts, taken together really confirm this is an event that wasn't a result of seed contamination, and the unique factors on this field, the pattern of the appearance of the volunteers and the other facts really suggest that it's isolated to this farm, to this field, and an unusual pattern. We can't really comment, but, it's fair to say that there are folks who don't like biotechnology and would use this as an opportunity to create problems. You may be aware, for example, that just in the last day, the FBI has reported that two sugar beet fields in the state of Oregon were destroyed by activists. And, it means if there's someone who is, who's prepared to break the law and enter a field illegally to destroy plants, it's also possible they would, have broken into a field to collect plants. So,
hey, we'll take the next question.
Our next question comes from Philip Rasher from Congressional Quarterly.
Yes, Rob, I want to be clear. Is the Inspector General of USDA involved investigating this? Have they begun to investigate this as a possible crime or as a suspicious incident, as you are suggesting?
what I have seen from the USDA, and obviously that's something you need to cover with APHIS. What they have reported on is that they are they have a very serious investigation underway with numerous folks in the vicinity doing interviews and testing. That they have clearly taken it very seriously. And that they have not ruled out any options, and clearly, I quoted, Mr. Vilsack's comments from a week ago that they do see a suspicious pattern here.
Jay, we'll take the next question.
Our next question comes from Tyne Morgan from Farm Journal Television.
Hey, Rob, this is Tyne. On the last call, you mentioned that Monsanto sent grain to USDA for their deep storage. I believe that was back in 2005. Now, recently we've heard some reports that suggest the USDA isn't sure they ever received those samples. So can you confirm that USDA did, in fact, receive those samples back when you sent those several years ago?
Yeah, so I saw that report, and I'm going to have Claire just go through one more time on this call what we've done to shut down that program, but I want to be crystal clear that that report that came out is incorrect, that the USDA has confirmed with us that they've not only received the samples, but that they've destroyed the samples. And so, let Claire, just take everybody through all the hard work that was done.
Sure. When we were shutting down the program, we were really very careful and sensitive to ensure that there was no material that was left out there. Our first step was to work with each cooperator and ensure that any material that they had was returned either to us, submitted to the seed storage facility in Colorado, the USDA seed storage facility, or destroyed. And we had each one of those cooperators confirm that fact with us both verbally and in writing. So we have that confirmation from each of the cooperators that that was done. And as Rob just suggested, we did get confirmation from the USDA that those samples were received, stored, and then ultimately were destroyed. The other fact is that when we shut the program down, all of the fields where we had done experimentation were monitored until no volunteers were observed. And if we would observe about even one volunteer in a field, we would continue to monitor that field for another year.
Shay, we'll go ahead and take the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ian Barry from Wall Street Journal.
Hi. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the Colorado facility. I guess I'm wondering to how confident you feel in the custody of the samples that were sent there and the possibility before they were destroyed, that's how they escaped or perpetrated this.
I'm highly confident. They documented the receipt of all of the samples that were sent, and then they've documented their destruction.
One follow-up. Can you how would you characterize the cooperation between Monsanto and USDA at this point?
As I at a high level, the comments I made in the script. First of all, I believe there's been outstanding cooperation between the USDA, between Monsanto and the universities. And, to think about it, this whole event's been going on for about 7 weeks. And to get to the point where we would have been able to analyze hundreds of thousands of samples of seed stock, develop assays for gene-specific testing, and get this down to one, field on one farmer's farm in Oregon, I think is tremendous. That being said, they are the regulator here, and we respect their right, and so we're working with them as closely as we can.
Shay, we'll go ahead and take the next question.
Our next question comes from Andy Pollack from New York Times.
Oh, thanks for letting me ask a second one. I just wanted to, you seem very definitive that this can't be seed contamination. What if, a little seed did leak out back during the field trials years ago and has, not much, but has persisted in the seed supply at low levels? No one found it because no one looked for it. And then, you know, it's there in low levels in perhaps one variety of seed, and it now, you know, pops up on a farm.
Excellent question, Andy. And it's one we've looked at and looked at hard. I mean, that's why we've analyzed the seed stock for virtually all the seeds sold in the state of Oregon and Washington State. And it's, you know, our analysis, it's the Washington State analysis and the USDA analysis. And then, you know, to be more specific, we've analyzed the seed stocks, and the USDA has analyzed the actual seed used by the farmer with no detections. I think, you know, and then stepping back, you know, these programs were shut down, you know, near over 10 years ago. If there was a contamination of breeding stock, you know, particularly in soft white wheat, remember almost all of our testing was done with Red Spring. You know, one stalk of red wheat would show up in a field and any breeder would have seen it. If that volunteer wheat was glyphosate resistant, it would have showed up as a glyphosate resistant volunteer before now. And so it just seems at this point really, really, really unlikely that this is a seed contamination. The last part of it, just to be really specific, is the farmer purchased that blend of 528 and Rod and planted it on multiple fields. So he planted the exact same seed on several different fields and only saw volunteers on a small patch on 1% of one field. That really rules out, you know, that the seed stock was contaminated.
Shay, we'll take the next question.
Our next question comes from Susan Oldenburg from Guardian.
Thank you for doing this call. I'm just confused a little bit because it seems to me that you're tacitly admitting a breach of controls here if you're saying that somehow some kind of eco-activist was able to get a hold of this seed variety and put it on the fields, which is what you're saying. So how could this person have obtained the seeds? Could you please tell me how that could happen without Monsanto's controls being breached in some way?
So first of all, I'm not saying that at this point. I said it's suspicious and it's certainly consistent with that pattern. You know, that's why I mentioned that just in the last few days, two field trials of sugar beets were destroyed in the state of Oregon.
I understand, but they didn't have to obtain a closely guarded material to do that. How did they get a hold of that material unless the controls were indeed breached? How do you
I'm trying to answer your question respectfully. So if someone has criminal intent and wants to break into a field, it doesn't matter whether it's a sugar beet field or a wheat field. If someone is going to break the law and enter a field and either destroy plants or samples, we can't guard against that. All I can tell you is what we've seen so far. The fact patterns are very suspicious.
Shay, we'll go ahead and take the next question.
Our next question comes from Jennifer Ladzik from High Plains Journal.
Hi. Yes, thank you so much for taking my question. In mentioning the plant materials that they're sent for or sent back to Monsanto or sent back to the folks in Colorado, how are those plant materials packaged? How is that chain of control documented? Are we talking large farm trucks with seed, or are we talking bags of seed? Are we talking is there video documentation or sheets that are signed? I guess go a little bit more in depth into that sort of process.
Why don't you go through the documentation and the auditing at another level of detail?
Yeah. So I think once again, what happens with any field trial that we did, it's always audited both by government agencies and in this case, our cases, we actually had a third party audit. So when we'd plant seed and when we'd harvest seed, they would monitor activities. When we shut down the seed, those seed, if any seed is moved from that field, it's carefully moved. It has to be double contained and is moved under particular notifications that have to be approved by agencies to move seed. So that's always followed. The amount of seeds that were stored at the USDA or Monsanto varies, but it tends to be not a large bag of seed, but a small amount of seed that would be double contained. And if it's for long-term storage, it tends to be stored in some cold facility that's, I don't know the exact USDA conditions, but probably under cold conditions and secured. And that's also true at Monsanto.
Shay, we've got time for two more questions.
Our next question comes from Greg Horsmeyer from DTN.
Yeah, Rob, you in the earlier call and several times you said that you provided the CP4 test to USDA and they validated it. In terms of trying to figure out what kind of seed variety this actually was, have you provided any further testing information to USDA on how to do that, or has USDA requested any of that kind of requested those kind of testing protocols from you? So I guess the question I'm asking, do you know that they're testing to find out whether this was actually a spring wheat or what kind of wheat, or really what kind of wheat variety this is, and have they had any conversation with you on that?
You know, so as I said earlier, the we don't have the plant samples in our possession, and we're not aware of the farmer or the field, so we haven't collected any ourselves. We've worked with the USDA to provide the event-specific assay and provided that assay to other governments. That's critical because, the point that's key here is the same CP4 gene that's in the CP4 event in wheat is the very same gene that makes the very same protein in Roundup Ready soybeans, in Roundup Ready corn, in Roundup Ready sugar beet, in Roundup Ready canola. And as you know, any shipment of wheat grain, even a small contamination from soybean or corn, and most of the shipments that are made, particularly internationally, the hulls of these large boats contain multiple seeds. It's really important to have an event-specific assay so that you're not detecting soybean grain dust on a wheat grain or a fragment of a piece of corn, and so. That's been our first focus, is getting a very valid, highly validated assay in the hands of individuals, both at the USDA, and we've worked with them to make that happen. They've validated it, and I think that's key to providing that tool for international government regulators. In terms of the variety testing, I expect that the USDA, from their communications, is doing those studies, and it should happen in the next few days.
Shay, we've got time for actually two more.
Our next question comes from Carrie Gilman from Reuters.
Yeah, hi, guys. Couple of things. One, I'm wondering if you can provide any sort of documentation you say you have from APHIS or the Colorado facility documenting this receipt and destruction, because, I believe you're referring to my report yesterday, but I spoke at length to the lead at the Colorado facility and in D.C. over this, as well as APHIS, and none of them confirmed what you're telling us. In fact, they said the opposite. So perhaps if you had something in writing on that, that would be helpful. But more importantly, could you help me understand or suggest how the seed, and maybe that this is not the right way to think of it, could still be viable after all of these years? It's my understanding that unless it's held at this Colorado facility or in some sophisticated storage, perhaps at Monsanto, just putting a bag of seed on the shelf isn't going to last you 10 years.
Terry, I appreciate your first question. I'm going to let Claire, who's responsible for our wheat program and testing, to go through one more time the documentation that we have and the conversations that she's had with the USDA.
Yeah, hi, Terry. Yeah, we do have documentation, and I believe we can provide a redacted version of that documentation.
Okay, that'd be helpful. Thank you. And then my
second. I just want to be clear that we have documentation that confirms that the USDA has received all of the samples that we've shipped and that they've destroyed all of the samples that we've shipped. And we also have notified the USDA of the miscommunication. They're aware of it, so I'm sure you'll get a direct response from the USDA.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't heard a word from them on that. What about this? Is this the right way to think about it, that viability for seed is pretty limited unless it's kept in a, you know, high-tech environment?
You know, typically what we would say is in the soil, the seed may be viable for 1 to 2 years. You know, in any kind of cool or shed storage, it would probably be multiple years. We don't know how this happened, and that's why it's so curious. It doesn't easily be explained by any of the events, and that's why we think that this field needs to continue to be investigated.
Okay.
And Shay, we'll have time for the last question.
Our last question comes from Ian Barry from Wall Street Journal.
Hi, thanks for the follow-up. Just wondering, given the stakes involved here financially for Santo, given the lawsuits that have filed, prior judgments in similar cases, I just wondered to what extent you're pushing for samples or maybe access to more information about the farmer so that you can conduct your own investigation, and whether you'd consider or it'd be possible to pursue that legally.
So we've certainly, as I said, we have not received samples. We don't know the farmer's identity or his field. And you know, I believe the farmer is a victim in this situation, and we respect that right for his anonymity. We would like the samples, and we've officially requested samples from both the university and the USDA, because you know, it's important for us to understand the variety used, and I think that could help us further in this investigation. So we'd like that, and that's a piece of information that would be important. But you know, I kind of close here by saying, you know, right now what we've really focused on is ensuring that the grain is clean and harvest can proceed. We've worked hard with the international regulatory agencies to ensure that the markets remain open, and that the seed crop for next year is clean. So we're working hard to maintain the marketplace and